We're talking with Robert Whitehurst, who helped his younger brother, Fred, track down the family of diarist Dang Thuy Cham, and has been doing research to fill in the history around the diaries. He is a tugboat operator in New Orleans and served in the Vietnam War on a boat in the Mekong Delta. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. When did you and your brother recognize that you had such a significant group of personal, powerful? Was it evident that this was powerful the first moment you took a look at it?
Yeah, of course it was more evident to Fred because he was there in that part of the country. The war was very active where he was. And his interpreter was doing, they did quite a lot of work with the diaries. We still have, probably 20 or 30 pages of Fred's writing down, basically taking dictation from his interpreter, especially the last diary. So, to Fred, Fred told me that this was pretty important to him. What he was getting. And then he brought the diaries. He brought one of the diaries with him when he came south to visit me the first year I was in country, and I looked at it with him. I read Vietnamese fairly well then, and I was very impressed.
What struck you? What really grabbed you?
What really grabbed me at the time was the fact that the writing was so so human. That she was so obviously an admirable, good-intentioned, honorable person, and of course in a war, you don't usually think of your enemy necessarily in those terms. And then the fact that she was a woman, that she was very dedicated, that she was in a role that most Western women never get into, and most Southern Vietnamese women, too, during a war were not involved in the war to the degree that, Dr. Cham was not a soldier. She was a civilian volunteer, but she was in the field.
Now, as a Vietnam vet, when you began reading it and relating to her, how did you feel about the war? Did it change your feelings? Did it change your feelings about the Viet Cong? Did you have a better understanding? How did you feel after you came to understand this woman deeper?
I don't know that it, it changed. I never had any deep animosity towards the Vietnamese on the other side. I went to language school for a year and a half, and a lot of work that, I did when I was with ASA and involved in recognizing that these people were human beings. They may have been enemy, but they were human beings. And this was not the first personal document that I had read the course of that length, being exposed to it at that length. And then the connection with Fred, that made it unique. But it wasn't, it wasn't the first time that I thought of somebody on the other side as being at least as human as I was, and I didn't really have any questions about the war in the sense I didn't go over there objecting to the war. I tried to keep an open mind, just like Fred. I come from a military family. Both of my parents were in the service. My dad for 30 years, and my mom was in the Army during World War II. And my grandfather, my dad's dad, was in the service. So that was something that was just part of our life. All of our friends as children, their fathers had been in World War II and the Korean War. We grew up with that. That was, like I say, it was just part of our life.
So when Fred brought the diaries back and you decided to seek out the family, how did you go about doing that?
Well, that was many, many years went by. Fred came back, went back to school. I came back, went back to school. Fred, you know, finished school. We talk about the diary sometimes. He started, you know, working, and I started working, raising families, and, you know, there wasn't a whole lot he could do with the diaries when he went in the FBI for quite a few years, plus the fact that, you know, the war went on 3 years after we were in Vietnam, and then for many, many years afterwards, we had no relations with the Vietnamese. My wife is Vietnamese, and she basically lost her family for 10 years after 75, after Saigon fell. So there was no real way to realistically, you know, try to make contact with somebody who could help us find the family.
In March, I understand, of 2005, you went to a Vietnam history conference in at Texas Tech, and you gave the diaries to the archivist there. And you, what happened at that conference?
Okay, well, preceding that, 2002, I had asked Fred if he would mind if I had a shot at, you know, doing a much better translation of the diaries and seeing what I could find. You know, I had gotten on computers and gotten into the internet age, so I started and gradually developed a much more readable, much smoother translation of the diaries, and started, you know, taking them apart, not physically, but listing the names and the places and the dates and things, trying to find out what kind of a person and who Dr. Trom was. And in my internet research, I found the Vietnam Project at Texas Tech. Going online to look at some of the articles, I, you know, ended up talking on the phone to some archivists there, and they were very interested in the diaries, the provenance of the diaries, and, you know, the fact that they are seemed to them that they might be a unique viewpoint on the whole war. And gradually, all through 2004, Fred decided that you know, that he would go to this conference in March of 2005. But he told me I had to go too, so the two of us went. And by then he had decided that, you know, perhaps he'd never find the family. And he worried about the security of the diaries and the history, you know, the future of the diaries, and decided to present them to the archives at Texas Tech, the Vietnam Project. And he did that at that time. When we went there, it was just a splendid affair with all sorts of scholars and veterans from the United States military, Vietnam, North and South. There were authors, there were Vietnamese authors, American authors, scholars, grad students, the two ambassadors, Ambassador Major and the previous ambassador to Vietnam, to Hanoi, were there. And there were also quite a few people who were actively traveling back and forth to Vietnam.
Was Dr. Trom like a ghost in your life?
Yes. Yes, she was. You know, I've written that in, you know, in 2003, 2004, she was whispers in smoke. You know, just a part of the history that I personally didn't have the grasp of it at that time that I do now.
And what's the grasp? What do you feel about it now, and how has that matured and grown?
You know, I came to admire her spirit, her dedication, the fact that she saw, you know, people as humans, and you know, it was obvious. And confirmed later, as you know, as I learned more, that she came from a somewhat privileged background. That she was an intellectual, and yet she dealt very well with peasant people. She had a great deal of sympathy for her you know, for the people that she met. And, you know, she was a special person, a unique person. She became not anonymous, you know. She became a personality, a real person, through her writings.
Why do you think she so captured the imagination of the Vietnamese now? You know, 200,000 or so books have been sold. What do you think?
Well, closer to 500,000 books have been sold by now.
What do you think is so intriguing and so romantic and so powerful about Dr. Cham?
Well, first, you know, the people of my generation in the 60s and 70s, she is a clear voice from that period of time. She wrote to herself. She didn't write to anybody else. She's very candid. And the spirit of dedication, her feeling about the communist cause, the nationalist cause, the Vietnamese cause, is very clear. It's not, it's not a memory. Of course, to her, it was real at the time, and it came 35 years to today, and suddenly all of us older generation are reading the kind of thoughts and words that we thought then and have gone in a large part out of our life. For the younger Vietnamese in Vietnam who have been born since the war, she is a peer. She's not speaking to them from, you know, what she thinks that might be important to them based on memories of, you know, 30, 40 years ago. She's, you know, her writing is speaking to them immediately, you know, as a young woman, as a contemporary almost. And her dedication and dedication to her ideals and her willingness to take that dedication to the, you know, to the final test, the courage of her conviction, so to speak, is very compelling to the younger Vietnamese that I've talked to.
What was it like to bring this gift, the diary, to her family in Vietnam to restore probably years of a life to them that they had not known? That must have been pretty powerful.
Yeah, well, we didn't, you know, we never expected to be welcomed the way we were. And I know Fred wanted to return the diaries in some way to the family without any expectation of gratitude or anything. You know, we talked quite often about, well, we'll, you know, Fred, I said, you can take these back, and they may thank you at the door and put you back on the plane, and that'll be that. But instead, you know, we had about a four-month email conversation, correspondence with her three sisters and her mother, her 81-year-old mother in Vietnam, you know, mostly through one of the sisters. And then that developed into family and people in the government, people in journalists and in the media and stuff. And Thuy's mother set the tone by saying, when asked how she could accept, members of the army who had killed her daughter into her home, that she felt convinced that Thuy's spirit had chosen Fred to preserve these diaries all these years, and went further to say, I was part of the package for me to, carry forth and finally, make the connection to the family. So it was extremely emotional. We went 10 days. It was, we were feasted and traveled and toasted and just spent a lot of time just with the family, too, on a very close personal basis, which developed into a practically seamless relationship, you know, on a human, just a very human level with no, of course we're different. We're different culturally and we have different histories, but I think everybody pretty much decided that, you know, first we were humans and we had this common interest, and then the rest of it sort of took care of itself.
What do you think, Dr. Cham, if she has a message for mankind, a message for the world, what do you think that message is?
I think you know that she continued to hope, she continued to believe in her cause. Continued to strive in spite of self doubts and the problems that she faced, the challenges. I mean, what she achieved with under incredible hardships is very admirable. The more I've looked into her actions in the combat zone, a very very violent, very dark part of the war, she continued to go. She was there almost 3.5 years. She survived. She was very successful as a professional, as a doctor. She was, in a position that very few young women in our society are ever in. And, the fact that she was able to do it, and did do it, encourages me that, most of us have that potential, whether we ever realize it or not, that's the question, but that she did, this little tiny, delicate, small woman.
24-year-old, 25-year-old.
Well, she was 27 when she was killed. She was, 24 when she came into the war zone.
What happened to her after the diary ends?
She, last words of the diary are on the 20th of June, 1970. At that time, she's been left with 5 wounded patients. 2 nurses that were with her had left in the morning to go try and get help. The support unit that was supposed to come back and bring supplies and things that had not shown up. They were down to their last few handfuls of rice. The patients were not ambulatory. She's a tiny little woman, and these men are seriously injured. And her last entry in the diary is very poignant. She asked, she wants for somebody to come, some friend, somebody to help, Well, on the 22nd, which was 2 days later, she was killed. She and 3 companions were on a mountain trail and met an American platoon. And when she was urged to surrender, she refused. She provided covering fire for the 3 companions who tried to escape. 2 of them were killed. The Americans realized they killed 1 other person, and then the Vietnamese have told us since that Dr. Thuy Tram and 2 of her companions were killed, and 1 person managed to escape. But in fact, research that I've done has shown that on the 23rd, the American same unit in the same area discovered less than 500 meters from where she was killed that the clinic that she was at, the little small clinic, had been completely resupplied. So sometime between the 20th and the 22nd, the unit had come in there, and she had not been abandoned. And I discovered this, in the American records in Washington and Maryland, I guess, in the National Archives. This is very significant to the Vietnamese, because here they are with a person who's become a major hero to them in their war with us, and they abandoned her. That was the feeling on reading the diaries. But in fact, finally, she hadn't been abandoned. She had been, supported by the people that she kept faith in. So you could say she was killed on the 22nd. The American unit stayed in the area for another 7 or 8 days. The company 1941 with the AmeriCal. She finally, when they left, the villagers, Montagnards in that area that came back through there, they didn't bury her. Her remains, of course, had deteriorated quite a bit, so they just piled the stones over her remains, and then it became a habit that people passing up the mountain trail would add stones to this sort of a cairn. And, you know, I think her family heard that she was killed within a year, and her father, who was a surgeon, had a stroke within a year after that, never recovered. He lived another 20 years. In 76, members of her family traveled down to Quang Ngai to Duc Pho and went back in the mountains and recovered her remains and took them down to the coast in Duc Pho, where she was interred in the martyr cemetery there. And then, I think in 1980, or 79 or 80, when transportation in the country had recovered more, they went back and they took her remains to Hanoi, where they're now in the Martyr Cemetery in Thu Liem outside of Hanoi.
Well, Robert Whitehurst, thank you for joining us for this podcast on Last Night I Dreamed of Peace, a Stanford Medicine podcast of the book. And it's a great story. It is an amazing story, and we thank you and your brother for bringing it to light.
I can tell you, it's certainly been a privilege and a pleasure to do this work, to be able to be associated with this. Thank you for calling me.
Thanks for being with us.